Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. Welcome to episode 17, which releases on Christmas Day, 2018. I wish everyone the merriest of Christmases. Happy Hanukkah, happy solstice, happy Kwanzaa. Whatever you believe, wherever you live, I wish you unlimited joy and infinite fun. May this holiday season revive your spirits. Today I'm featuring new Christmas stories written by three Vancouver Island authors, Jackie Nelson, who is a historical romance writer, Judith Hudson, a romantic women's fiction author, and me, Joanne Carson. I write paranormal romance and mystery. First, we'll start with Jackie Nelson. Award-winning author Jackie Nelson has a rich background drawn as a writer. Her love for historical romance with adventure, grit, and passion came from watching Western movies when growing up on a cattle farm in Alberta, which is in northern Canada. She says she had the best childhood imaginable. Jackie focused on computer programming in university and worked for years number crunching in the business industry. She moved into animation and worked on Harry Potter computer games. How cool is that? Then she started writing. Now she splits her time between writing and working part-time at one of the most popular bookstores in Victoria. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you for having me, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been really enjoying your podcast, so it's a delight.
Well, that's great to hear, and I'm thrilled to be talking to you. So tell us about your favorite Christmas memories.
Yes. Well, I think like with most people, it's all to do when you're a kid, unless you grow up and have kids, which I haven't had the chance to do yet, so haven't grown up yet. When I was growing up, there is, you know, so different than it is today. We had TV. We didn't have internet. I lived in the country, so we had 2.5 channels. And that part, the half, is always one of my favorite stories to tell because the half channel had all the best shows on it, but It would hardly ever come in. You know, it would be snowy and then staticky, and then it would come in and you'd be like, oh, I got to watch this thing and whatnot. So it was really like a challenge watching TV and being entertained. So when you did get to see things, it was that much more enjoyable. But those animated shows, you know, when you're a kid, like the original, well, How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Little Drummer Boy and the Charlie Brown Christmas, those are some of my favorites. But I think growing up in Canada, I've realized that there were a trio of other short animated films that maybe were only in Canada because the Reader's Digest made them, and they were called The Selfish Giant, The Happy Prince, and The Little Mermaid. And the first two are stories by Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. But those ones, oh, they just get me. Like, I love them, and they're real tearjerkers as well, too. But, you know, that's when a story is really tugging at your heartstrings and doing his job. So, yeah.
And I find I watch them over and over, the Christmas stories. It's like you can never get too much Grinch.
Yes, oh, for sure. Yeah. And then a couple other things, memories. You know, in my family, it was decided that you could open one Christmas present the evening before.
So
that was always entertaining. And the best part really of it was just thinking, the anticipation of which one you'd choose and would it be the right one, because heaven forbid you had to wait until the next morning to get at the other ones.
You didn't want to pick the socks, right?
No, yeah, you could be really happy or really disappointed for a few hours.
Yeah.
And then in the morning we'd have a stocking and it would just be jam-packed with stuff overflowing and just little things that you never thought you wanted, but of course your parents knew you well enough or were listening to really put in things that you enjoyed. So they gave us a good Christmas.
Yeah, I have very similar memories in that we had the one present the night before, and it was just so exciting. We would rattle and shake the book boxes ahead of time to try to figure out which one we would pick, and yeah, and it was nice going to bed with a one present. So, was it different growing up on a ranch, though? Was it a different kind of Christmas?
I don't think so. Not really, because Christmas is sort of, you're mostly indoors with your family or well, if you don't live on the West Coast or certain parts of the world where you don't have snow, then, it's a holiday for most people and you go outside and maybe toboggan and stuff like that. So all those kind of traditional things really don't change, I think, based on time period or location, because they're so traditional, so you just stick to it, that sort of thing.
The traditions are great. So tell us about your Christmas stories.
Yes. So last year I had the great pleasure of being asked to be in a 12 book series called the 12 Day I'm going to stumble actually on my The 12 Days of Christmas Mail Order Brides. It's quite a detailed title, but so yeah, the 12 Days of Christmas Mail Order Brides. So the premise was that there would be 12 authors writing 12 individual stories, but they'd all be interlinked, and it would be based on the 12 Days of Christmas song. So each author would choose a day and therefore a song, and take that song and make it a theme in their book. So I remember, like, I kind of got on the project in the beginning, and I was like, oh, same thing like with Christmas Eve. Choose something, choose wisely. So it's like, I'll choose the fourth day. It's the calling birds, because I'll have more options as far as what I'm going to do. It's a little bit more vaguer, so maybe more possibilities, rather than if you choose the hens or the partridge or something like that. Like, you're very a lot of birds in that song. So yeah, it turned out well, because at the same time as the project came around, I was watching Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries,
Oh, I
and
love
there was a
him.
character, yeah, on there named Jack, and not that that's a bird name, but his name was Jack. So I thought, okay, hero's going to be Jack. And I was also watching Miss Peregrine's Home for Something Children or something like that. And I thought, oh, Peregrine, that's a great name for a person. So my hero became Jack Peregrine. And then I was thinking about my heroine's name, and I thought, oh, Birdie's a good name. There's that Sandra Bullock movie from way back where I think it's called Hope Floats, and her name is Birdie in there. And I thought, well, what's the real name for Birdie, when you have a nickname? And so my heroine became Bernadette, and with the nickname Birdie. So yeah, and then I thought, well, I really get way too thinking too much about things and probably should just start writing the story. But I kept puzzling and puzzling, and I thought, well, it's the fourth day of Christmas, so I'll have four different characters. And one would be the hero and the heroine, obviously. And then that my hero would also have a family business that he runs in the town of Noel, where this series is set. It's a Western historical romance. So we chose a small mining town in the Colorado Mountains, and we named it Noel. So it's a fictional town,
Perfect.
but based on other towns of that time period in 1876. So my hero runs a family business with his brother and his grandpa. So those were the four characters: hero, heroine, brother, and grandpa. And choosing the grandpa was one of the best ideas of all, because he became a source of friction and love and
I
conflict
love your
and
grandpa.
thank you. Yeah. So, and he's absent-minded as well too. So, he's creating problems due to that, but it's not really his fault. And so, yeah, I kind of based him on a combination of many characters, like people I've known and my mom, and then for the absent-minded stuff, really myself, because I was like, oh, I can't remember anything, so that's totally me in that
Well,
direction. So
he's just so lovable and so real. He's a very compelling character.
yeah, and then my then I realized, with Jack, my name is Jackie, short for Jacqueline, that really I was Jack as well too, because Jack is so protective of his grandpa, and that's the way I was feeling and have always felt about my mom. So really, it just became a more and more personal story as time went on. I think more than any of my stories so far. So.
Is that right? Oh.
Yeah.
Is there another one this year, another series this year? Or?
Yeah, so after the 12 books were published last December, the group decided that they would continue writing the stories, still set in the same fictional town, and it would just be, as time passed, there were more stories in the town. So I hadn't had a chance to write one until now, but I'm currently writing another Christmas book, so it'll be a year later in 1877 in the same town, Noel, Colorado, mm-hmm. and it's actually my hero, Jack's brother, Max, and it's his story. And the premise was that I had him go to the nearest large town, Denver, because he wanted to spread his wings and be on his own and, you know, do his own thing in Denver. But now he has to come back to his small town to help his brother. And also because he's met a lady who is who he works with in Denver. And I'm having real fun with her. So I've made her a red-haired Welsh tomboy wagon driver who works for Peregrine's Post and Freight, the freighting company. So, and she decides that she wants to go to Noel to get a kind of a makeover, mm-hmm. to transform herself into a proper lady and win, of course, the heart of the man she loves, who is her boss and her best friend, Max Peregrine, the brother of Jack. So,
oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, so it's I keep thinking, you know, of the movie My Fair Lady and that whole transformation and coming up with ideas for that. You know, she doesn't talk proper and she doesn't understand polite conversation and she swears a lot and she can't figure out how to wear a dress and yeah.
But he loves her from the beginning or he loves her after the transformation?
He loves her from the beginning. They're best friends and he doesn't kind of want to wreck that and she doesn't either, but she still figures if she transforms herself, maybe something could happen to shake up the status quo.
Yeah. That sounds good. That sounds really mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
What is it about the Old West that you find so compelling?
I think it is because I grew up on a farm. And all my memories from the farm they're so vivid, you know, the seasons on the farm and the cattle and having a horse there and all that. So it's really all those. And then again, once with the limited amount of channels that the shows and movies that would come on were very few, but they seemed to play a lot of Westerns. And I especially love the Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's all that adventure and intrigue and not an awful lot of romance, but still just great characters and settings and history and that. So, those two things, the farm and those old Western movies, unfortunately, they don't make as many of them as they used to. But I find it a real interesting thing, and story ideas just come from there. You know, I say, ooh, what would happen if this, you know, as most authors do, but my ideas come from those little historical elements, like what would happen on a cattle drive or what would happen on the Oregon Trail or something like that.
And your characters are not like the characters in, you know, Gunsmoke, etc. They're much more lively. Like your women are very what can I say, active.
Yeah, well, that's part of what I love about writing. Part of my tagline is fall in love with a new old West where the men are steadfast and the women are adventurous. So my women, you know, they may start out, you know, as, you know, average people sometimes, not all the time, but life makes things adventurous for them. They have opportunities to do something or they're forced to do something by some outside force as well, too. That could happen. So I have scouts and spies and trick riding superstars. It's kind of like the old West shows and that. So, yeah, that's what I like.
And it's all very believable. They're really full characters that draw me into the story. Where can people find you in your books?
Well, most of my books are on, all of my books are on Amazon. And in the Kindle Unlimited program. So if you're reading via Kindle Unlimited, then you can read my book for free on that. But yes, on Amazon, or you can go to my website where I have some book trailers and excerpts and all that. And it's just my name, JackieNelson.com. So
with no E.
With no E, but if you put in the E, it'll still go to the same place because I bought both domains.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, thinking ahead.
Yeah, you are smart. And do you have a favorite Christmas drink to share with us?
Oh, yes. Well, I've had the pleasure, of growing up on a farm, but I also had the great pleasure of working in other countries. I worked in England for 4 years and in Germany for 2 years, and I just loved the Christmas markets that they would have, especially in Germany. So I got really addicted to the Glühwein that they have, which is a hot mulled wine traditionally found in those markets. And I've never actually made it at home, but talking to you inspired me to find a recipe which we're going to share here. I don't know if it'll work out, but I suppose I should try it at home as well too. But if you're ever in a Christmas market and you see a German stand and they have the Glühwein, then I highly recommend it. It's very lovely.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Jackie, for sharing your stories today. It's been awesome. As you know, I read every one of your books, and I'm looking forward to reading the latest.
Well, thank you.
Next is Judith Hudson. Award-winning author Judith Hudson lives on Canada's Wild West Coast. Her fortune-based series focuses on relationships between friends and families in a small town, and each story has its own happy ending. Her Pacific Northwest setting is based on Honeymoon Bay, a logging town on Vancouver Island, but she changed its name to Fortune Bay and moved it to the Olympic Peninsula to, shall we say, protect the innocent. Besides being a talented writer, Judith is an artist and photographer with a fine arts degree. Her understanding of cover design is amazing. So I'm really happy to talk with her about that as well as Christmas. Welcome, Judy.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for having me.
I have to keep remembering that you write as Judith, so sorry about that slip. So tell us about your art background.
I painted mostly outdoors, mostly in oils for many years. And then as my kids were small, I started going to university one course at a time and got my fine art degree in 2000. So, but then after about 5 years of painting, I started writing and stopped painting and basically have been writing ever since.
So you prefer writing, or just sort of like a season, it just changed?
It changed all of a sudden. It's, I was selling paintings, but it's hard to really break in and make it as a business. And I was getting a little bit frustrated, and I'd always wanted to do some writing. So once I started, it just, completely captured my attention. Now I do a little bit of painting for a hobby, and that suits me fine.
And how does your background help you design covers and bookmarks and things like that?
Well, it's all transferable skills. And even with the writing, the painting, I painted the things I'm writing, the areas I'm writing about so many times, and people say that my writing's very visual, and I guess that's why. But with the covers, I'm lucky to have my daughter is a graphic artist, and we collaborate on the covers, and I usually find the image and mock up a cover and give it to her, and she cleans it up and designs the font and this kind of thing. Always changes the font. She's the graphic professional, so.
It's fantastic having someone to collaborate with.
It is, yeah, and we get along pretty well. If I say, well, that won't work for the market, she's a marketing person, so she gets it.
So what do you think is important to have on the covers?
Well, I'm just changing my covers because at first I was picking covers that really spoke to me about the books, which you would think would be the important thing. Mm-hmm. And now when I ask my readers what they think of the covers, they go, oh, we love the strong women on the covers. And that's true, but when you just have the tiny little covers on Amazon, you need something because they basically are I guess, romance, although I say romantic women's fiction, but because the romance isn't so heavy, it's mostly family, friends, small town romance. So you have to give that idea right away on the cover, because that's the first thing that sells it. You know, if they don't click on your cover, they don't read your blurb. And then that back cover blurb that is up on Amazon, that's what should sell the book. But if, you know, if the cover doesn't grab them, you've lost a reader.
So the fact that you're changing it fascinates me. How are you changing it from, you had strong women were sort of your focus before, and what is your focus now?
Now it's more on the relationship, because really that's the reader's, I don't want it to look like there are no bare chests, no total embrace lying on the bed, nothing like that, because that's not the focus of my stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the romance is part of their life journey, really, and that's, I guess, the part of their life journey we're focusing on in the book, but so many other things are going on. So it's sort of, I've brought the male protagonist, the love interest, into the picture now. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing him in, but in a more lighthearted, casual way. Like with the new Christmas book, I had a gray cover of a woman walking down a dock in the mist toward a boat, and it's called Home for Christmas. And I think that's like my daughter coming home for Christmas. That's Christmas on Vancouver Island. You know, it's often I'm picking her up and it's misty and she's taking the ferry because there's too much fog to fly over on a little float plane. And so to me that said Christmas, but somebody pointed out to me recently, if you didn't live here, there was nothing on the cover that said Christmas except the title. So I've changed it so that at a glance, people can see, like it's just a chin to hands of two people, and they're holding out a Christmas parcel, and it says Home for Christmas, and it doesn't really say anything about the story, although, you know, just that there is a couple coming together. In this case, it's old friends, friends to lovers story. So,
I think that sounds perfect, because people know right away it's a relationship, and it's Christmas, and it's going to have a happy ending.
Right, and there's actually a lot of trauma in between, but those are the three things it says exactly.
Yeah.
So that's important. So I'm slowly going to change all the covers in the series to be, I think, a little more clear about what the series is about.
It's amazing what we learn as we go along. I love your covers, but I can see what you mean about Christmas here. The landscape can look quite moody. And for somebody living in the Midwest, they're not going to understand that that's our Christmas.
And I thought the gray sort of reflected some of the parts of the story, although parts of the story are quite funny too, but it didn't say Christmas, and that was what you're you know, selling at this time of year.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm going to change them all a little bit, just tweak them. Some people change their covers apparently every 2 years, and this has been more than 2 years, so well, I've learned a lot.
I've noticed on Netflix that they seem to change their covers now almost weekly. And so you think I could swear I've seen that movie, but it looks different. And sure enough, it's the same movie, but they've changed the cover. And it obviously works.
Well, and maybe you grabbed a different group of readers or something. Luckily, Amazon, although I do sell on all the platforms, but I know Amazon will tell you if you've bought that title before. So yeah, I'm not worried that my readers will you know, buy it again.
No, that which is a really nice thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So where can the readers find you and your books?
Well, my website is judithhudsonauthor.com because there are quite a few Judith and Judy Hudsons. One is a Southern Baptist singer. You know, she seems to have all the names picked up really early on. Anyway, so judithhudsonauthor.com. And my books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo. I have a Kobo promotion sale of Home for Christmas coming up starting on the 22nd. So that will be good for Canada, the States, and Great Britain. Cool. Yeah, so I like to use all of them. Apple, did I say Apple iTunes?
Yeah.
And then all the many little ones that Draft to Digital distributes to.
And I noticed that you also write mystery. Do you do something different for those covers?
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking of adding a drop of blood. They're all cultural mysteries. And the first one is out, and it's Temple of the Jaguar. So there's set in the Mayan town, village, and archaeological site. And so the cover is a picture of a carving of it. It's a carving of a jaguar on a stone wall. But I think I'm going to add a drop of blood on the carving because, again, I have to say it's a mystery, right? Like it's a murder mystery. Looking at it with this new frame of mind, I'm thinking, does it say murder mystery? Not without a little, there's no murder in the title and there's got to be something on the cover. So, yeah, I think I'll just make a little tweak to that one too.
Well, it's fun that you can that we can keep changing it and that we have that kind of control.
Well, yes.
I love talking to you about design, and I hope you'll come on another time. We can talk some more about it. And all the information about your books will be in the show notes for the audience. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Now it's my turn. First, I'll tell you about my Christmas stories, and then I'll tell you about my perfect Christmas. My latest release, Murder for Christmas, is a gothic suspense, which I describe as Agatha Christie meets the House of Usher. The back blurb reads, when codebreaker Madison Rathbone gets an all-expense-pay trip to a remote island in the Pacific Northwest the week before Christmas, she expects a peaceful getaway from the fake Santas in the city and the drama of her family's turkey feast. But Dead Man's Island offers no such sanctuary. Trapped in a maze of secrets, scandals, and murder with a side of ghosts, Maddie struggles to make sense of it all. Macabre stories of gruesome deaths on the estate go back centuries. Her logical mind refuses to believe in legends, but there's no reasonable explanation for what's going on around her. 12 strangers invited to the gathering discover turkey is not the only thing on the menu. As one by one, they meet their maker. Will Mad Rath's superior logician skills crack the mystery before the killer gets her? Or is there a supernatural force at work that cannot be conquered? Where did I get the idea for this story? Okay, this is kind of weird interviewing myself, but I'll answer the question. I love Agatha Christie. Her book, And Then There Were None, has a special place in my heart. I've tried many times to write a similar story, but I found it difficult to manage a large stage of characters. This novella actually took me 3 Christmases to finish. I would pick it up, add a chapter, and put it down again. I wrote it in first person and third person. I tried different heroines. This year, I pushed it through with the eccentric character Mad Rath, a codebreaker who thinks the world can be defined by logic. She's in for a few surprises. It was great fun to write, and early readers have responded well to the mystery within it. And the interviewer asks, isn't this different from what you've been writing lately? Yes and no. I've been writing light fantasy. gothic stuff with a wink, witches, vampires, and ghosts, in stories that thrilled and chilled with a side of humor. That there's not a lot of humor in this story. It's straight suspense and mystery. It's definitely darker. But there is a ghost, a sentient lodge, and a curse, so the paranormal element remains strong. My other two Christmas stories are A Highland Ghost for Christmas, which I wrote 2 years ago. It's the first story in the Gambling Ghost series and is my best-selling story. It's now perma-free, I'm hoping. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm working on getting it there, and is available on all platforms. I Mess Up Christmas is a novella I wrote last year, and it falls within the Ghosts in Abbey series, and it's about Abby looking for a stolen angel. It's available on Amazon. All book links can be found in my show notes on Blood, Sweat, and Words. And I'm trying to put all the books free on Christmas Day. My perfect Christmas is quiet and cozy. Don't get me wrong, I like to see as many of my family as I can around the big day. But after all the chaos of the season subsides, I like to sit by the fire with a hot cup of good coffee, chocolates in easy reach, a good book on my lap, and loved ones nearby. I think about how grateful I feel for my many blessings, and it fills me with joy. That, to me, is Christmas. Wishing you joy, peace, and love this season.